Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for joining the Partnership for Disaster Health Response NOFO Technical Assistance Call. We appreciate your time today. Next slide, please. Before we jump into the webinar, I just wanted to share some quick instructions for participation via Zoom. So if you have a question during our call today, please feel free to use the Q&A to submit a written question or to raise your hand. And one of us will call upon you and unmute you and invite you to ask your question. I think with that, we can go to the next slide, and I'll hand it over to Jennifer Hanna for some opening remarks.
Good afternoon, everyone. And I'm Jennifer Hanna, the Deputy Director of ASPR's National Healthcare Preparedness Programs, or NHPP branch. It is our pleasure to be with you today to discuss the Partnership for Disaster Health Response, NOFO, technical assistance call. And we are going to have a short presentation or overview for the NOFO, and then we'll dedicate the majority of this call for questions and answers. But before I pass it over to the next person, just wanted to provide a brief introduction regarding of those who will be speaking today. So Brittany Seiler, who is a senior advisor with our National Healthcare Preparedness Programs, will be providing the overview of the NOFO. And then we also have our Chief Grants Management Officer, Virginia Simmons, from our ASPR grants, from ASPR Grants Management. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Brittany Seiler, who will walk you through the agenda and start walking you through the overview for the NOFO. So Brittany?
Great, thank you so much, Jennifer. And thank you all so much for joining. We're very excited to be launching this notice of funding opportunity and to walk you all through a little bit of information today, but mostly to hear your questions and answer them as best as we can. So today during our call, we'll be giving an overview of the NOFO itself, eligibility criteria, as well as the application, which our grants management team will be walking through. We'll also cover the application review process and then get to the question and answers with you all. Next slide. So first, starting out with the award information, go to the next slide. We'll be talking a little bit about what is the Partnership for Disaster Health Response. So for those of you who have seen this NOFO before, and for those of you who haven't, we have a program within ASPR called the Regional Disaster Health Response System, or RDHRS, which we've been funding a number of demonstration sites for this RDHRS build out to really see how we can continue to address healthcare preparedness challenges, establish best practices for disaster readiness, and really pull together the entire healthcare delivery system. These demonstration sites are really showing what an RDHRS can do. So they're pulling together many different partnerships across their region and improving the statewide and regional situational awareness, building partnerships across all of these partners, aligning plans and policies, procedures as much as possible to help with disaster response and preparedness as well. And then also working to increase the statewide regional and medical surge capacity. And that's both surge capacity overall within the healthcare system, as well as increasing specialty surge capacity and considerations along those lines. And last but not least, the sites work to develop readiness metrics, as well as conduct exercises to test the capabilities among each of the above areas. So you can tell the RDHRS demonstration sites are all very busy. So this notice of funding opportunity is to create a fourth RDHRS demonstration site. And next slide. So as of right now, we currently have three demonstration sites across the country. Region 1 was the first demonstration site, along with Region 7, which goes by the Region 7 Disaster Health Response Ecosystem, or RDHRE. And we recently awarded last year the Mountain Plains RDHRS, which is located in Region 8. So each of those has a primary funding agency, as you can see on the line there, of all the different primary entities that those partnerships were formed with. However, each of them has a robust partnership community, as well as all the different components that we'll talk through in just a few minutes. So the sites have really been able to show many different capabilities and accomplishments over their past few years. And we're very excited to have on a fourth site that will really help to not only show the demonstration potential in that particular region or area and form more partnerships, really continue to further out and refine the RDHRS concept, but also work on showing the capabilities of the RDHRS as a network, because that's really part of all of these demonstration projects and seeing not only how we can build and enhance preparedness in an area, but also how we can think about it from a nationwide level and pull together various different assets. Next slide. So when we're talking about eligibility, one of the primary questions that we've already received this year is who is actually eligible in order to receive an award. So in order to receive an award through this announcement, it consists of a partnership. So all of the entities that apply for this NOFO require this partnership of various different required members. The reason for doing so is because that way we can really pull together all of these partners. And by no means does the RDHRS only have to consist of these partners. However, these are the partners that are codified within statute as being required members, and that applicant has to be one of these entities. So those entities include one or more hospitals with at least one that's a dedicated designated trauma center. It also includes one or more local health facilities. That can include clinics, health centers, community health centers, primary care facilities, mental health centers, mobile medical assets, or long-term care facilities. So ensuring one of those type of partners or more is at the table as part of the partnership. Additionally, it includes one or more political subdivisions, such as one or more states or one or more states and or one or more political subdivisions. So thinking about those different opportunities when it comes to cities or others from that standpoint. And last but not least, the partnership also requires one or more EMS organization or emergency management organization. So really trying to pull together both the healthcare side as well as the EMS and emergency management components. So as I mentioned, all of the partners that you see on those bullets are required to be part of the actual partnership for the application, with one particular entity serving as the primary recipient. As a result, those entities that can serve as the primary recipient, if there are other entities who are curious in terms of whether they are eligible to receive an award, there are other ways to incorporate partners such as hospital associations and various other partners into the partnership. However, the primary recipient must be one of those entities on the line. So hospitals, local healthcare facilities, political subdivisions, EMS, or emergency management. Next slide. Great. So just a quick slide. When we say regions, what do we mean? So right now we're using the HHS or FEMA regions, of which there are 10 throughout the country. As I mentioned, we currently have RDHRS sites in Region 1, as well as Region 7 and Region 8. So we're very excited about each of those and looking forward to building opportunities to grow the RDHRS further. Next slide. And with that, I'm going to turn things over to Virginia Simmons, who is, as Jennifer mentioned, our Chief Grants Officer. So over to Virginia.
Good afternoon, everyone. So I want to go over the application and submission process. Next slide. The application information is provided on pages 23 through 32 of the funding opportunity announcement. Now, we recommend that you follow the guidelines within this section very closely. You will find on page 23, you will find the required grant forms, and SF stands for standard form. So SF meaning standard form 424, which is your application for federal assistance, your budget form, which is standard form 424A, and your disclosure of lobbying activities form, if applicable. Now, if you are not involved in any lobbying activities, you are still required to sign off and submit this form. You can just annotate in /A for not applicable, the abbreviation, or just write out not applicable, but this form is required. You must disclose whether or not you have lobbying activities involved. And failure to submit these required forms will leave you ineligible. We will not be able to review your application, so your application will not be submitted for review. So please complete these important forms. These are required. We, of course, want you to complete the entire application, but if there are you're having issues with other parts of the application, you can kindly contact myself. I'm more than happy to assist you. My information is in the NOFO for contact, but these forms are very critical. You must submit them in order for your application to be reviewed for eligibility. Please go to the next slide. Now, the next slide it's just a brief overview of how to prepare your application. And again, I just want to reiterate, all this information is available on slides 23 through 32. I want you to pay particular attention to the scoring instructions in section 6 as well. As you are preparing your information, your application will be peer reviewed, and that is in section 6. Section 6 begins on page 32 of the NOFO. And it ends on page 36. So it's pages 32 through 36 will discuss the actual review of your application. Pay close attention to the scoring instructions. Each scoring criterion has a scoring number, or a score that is applied to it. So pay attention to those areas. It's very important when you're preparing your project narrative. And there is a 12-page limit. Now on page 12, there's detailed information about what components of your project narrative are counted towards the scoring of your application. Your budget and attachments have no page limit. Also, we want you to pay close attention to the submission requirements, such as the font style, which is Times New Roman, and also the font size, which is size 11 point. Is the size, and also make sure that your application is in black and white, no color, and you follow the guidelines in terms of the 1-inch margins. You can have double space, at least one column, and one-sided. All pages should be one-sided and numbered. Next slide, please. Also, what is very critical is submission of your application. It is electronic. You are not able to submit your application via email to any of the ASPR contacts. It must be submitted through grants.gov electronically. If you are experiencing any issues, technical issues or what have you, are to contact the grants.gov help desk, and that information is on the website, but I do ask that you contact me directly so I can provide you any assistance as best as possible. And as this slide indicates, please do register for your SAMS registration as soon as possible. It takes at least up to 72 hours for your registration to become active. And if you wait too long, this could jeopardize you having a successful submission of your application. And there is nothing that we can do at that point. And if you do run into some issues while trying to register for SAMS, please don't hesitate to contact me as well. You will need to contact the SAMS website and their help desk. But again, contact me if you have any issues. I would like to know what you're experiencing and if there's anything I can do to step in to assist you. But do not wait. Do register as soon as possible. Start your online submission process as early as possible. And follow the instructions in terms of your online submission, which is annotated here in this slide. Next slide. And here are some helpful tips for you, which I've reiterated again and again. Do not wait until the last minute, because your registration for SAMS in particular can be timely and it will cost you if you do not register for your SAMS registration on time. And again, I'm going to reiterate again, make sure that you have the required forms that were highlighted in the first slide, your SF-424, which is your application form, your 424A, which is your budget form, and your lobbying disclosure forms. Those are the three key forms that must be submitted in order for your application to initially be reviewed for eligibility. All documentation about applications will go to the person listed as a business official. So please make sure that you have the appropriate business official annotated on your SF, your standard form 424, and also, and then who is knowledgeable about your organization as well. For any information we may have once we receive your application for questions about what you have submitted. Now, typically, once we receive your application, if you do not hear from us in 30 days, then that is pretty much an indicator that your application has been received. You will receive, all unsuccessful applicants will receive a notification that their application was ineligible within 30 days. Those who have been reviewed, they will also receive additional information, those applications that have been reviewed through the peer review process. You will receive your weaknesses and strengths about your application. Official notification of successful applicants will come much later. And when we say official, that means that those successful applicants will actually receive a notification of award, and that makes it official notification. And next slide. Okay, so now we're going to go, I think I'm going to cover that as well. Okay, next slide, the application review process.
And Virginia, I can cover this one.
You have that cover, okay. Thanks.
Absolutely come back to Virginia for questions, because I'm sure that many of you have them on the application itself and all the various different components of that. So we did want to flag for you all that once your application comes through to us, as Virginia mentioned, if you don't hear from us, it can be a good thing. So as we work on the application review process, there are a couple different steps for this. First and foremost are a set of screening criteria. So ensuring that you have all of the required forms and application components, and that you're one of the partners that's designed in statute, like we talked about, to ensure that you have everything ready to go, and then your application can be passed on to the next part of the process, which is actually the objective review panel. So for this objective review panel, we pull in individuals who are experts in the field that can be from a variety of different places, whether they're from the federal government, from academia, from the private sector, or from elsewhere. So these individuals work to review each of the individual applications, and then use a series of criteria, including approach, organizational capacity, work plan, budget, and project relevance and evaluation, to score through the applications, as well as discuss the applications further to identify the applications for moving on to next stages. So you can see in the slide here that each of the different components is weighted differently. And you can read more about each of these different areas and what it translates to in the NOFO itself. It works through descriptions for each of these particular areas. The next slide. All right, so now we'll be moving to the question and answer period of the call, which is really, we're looking forward to hearing from you all in terms of questions that you all have, and moving on from there. So the first question that I see is from Jessica. If there is an RDHRS already in your region, is it fair to assume that you're looking for an applicant outside of the current regions, or would you consider an application from within already awarded regions? So it's a great question, and it's something that I'm sure is on at least some of your minds. So the way that we do this is that obviously, we have our regional sites already established in Region 1, Region 7, and Region 8. So while there is not necessarily a prohibition to say that if there is already an RDHRS in your region that you cannot apply, however, we do encourage that if there are two projects within the same region that they cannot overlap. So there are kind of some nuances there when it comes to if there are two RDHRSs in a region. So ensuring that each of them can function independently and be able to meet all of the goals individually. However, part of the challenge is because the RDHRS is designed to be regional, likely there would be several different partners overlapping among each of the sites, which is something that can be challenging. So while it's not a definitive, no, you cannot apply for an RDHRS if there is already an RDHRS in your region, there are some nuances to that as well. And this is also, I forgot to mention, we actually have an FAQ available online within the ASPR website, and you can drop the link of that in the chat for everyone, and you can see some of the frequently asked questions over the years as well.
Thanks, Brittany. I see two other questions in the chat. One is, when is the start date once the award is made?
So once the award is made and the site is selected, I believe that the program starts immediately following. So I believe that it officially starts on October 1st, but let me just turn to Jennifer Hanna and see when I'm wrong.
The start date of the award is September 30.
I was close. Thank you, Jennifer.
That's okay. Just one day off.
Great. The next question is, can you combine two regions for the program?
Bill, that's a great question. And I'm going to look to Jennifer also for support on this. So I would say that I don't know that you're necessarily prohibited from applying with two regions. However, I will say that it is a challenge to coordinate even one region for an RDHRS just because of the number of partners who are involved and the significant involvement of each of those partners. And just the challenges and opportunities, honestly, of aligning plans and policies across that region. So it can be challenging to have two regions within one RDHRS. However, we do recognize that there are certain areas that are along the border of two regions, and maybe that's something that can be further discussions. We will say also that our RDHRS demonstration sites work very closely together. So region one, region seven, and region eight all work very closely and are aligning things. So for example, region seven and region eight are really trying to see where they can line up some opportunities so that it can be coordinated across the different regional areas.
Great. The next question is, would participation in the NDMS military-civilian interoperability pilot study be of any importance, positive or negative, on this award?
Of course, it's a great question. So we are aware of the NDMS military-civilian interoperability pilot study. As you likely can see from many of the deliverables and components of that project, many of them have similar opportunities as the one in our RDHRS program build out. So it wouldn't necessarily hurt the award. I think there are opportunities among each of them to really build out. And we do have one of our sites is actually both. So there are some opportunities that way. But Jennifer, not sure if there's anything else to add on that.
Yes. No, that's you accurately have responded to that. Thank you, Brittany.
Thank you. The next question is, the grants.gov workspace indicated that an abstract is required, but there is no mention of an abstract in the NOFO. Is an abstract truly required? And if so, what is the character or word limit?
Jennifer, Virginia, this offhand, or Virginia?
Yes. So that is referring to the project abstract. So it's basically just a summary of your program description. But there's no mention of it. Let me get back to that question. Before we leave, I'll follow up with that, with a response. You can move forward with answering other questions. I'll circle back.
Great. Thanks, Virginia. We'll make a note to come back on that before we close the call today. The next question is, if the due date for the application is the 20th of September and you will take 30 days to screen, how could the start date be on the 30th of September?
So I think just a little bit of kind of cross wires. So when Virginia was talking about, if you don't hear from us in 30 days, that you can assume that your application has been processed. We're in fact processing things very quickly. As soon as the applications come in to us, we are screening them typically within 24 to 48 hours to ensure that they are eligible and can be passed on to the objective review panel. And then the objective review panel has a robust discussion over typically a period of several days before a site is selected from there. So it is in fact 30 September 2021 that this notice of funding, once it is awarded, will be in effect. And that screening, once we receive the applications, occurs very rapidly.
Great, thank you. The next question is the application due at 11:59 a.m. or p.m.?
The applications are due 11:59 p.m. And if I may just circle back, can I circle back to that question about the project abstract at this point in time, everyone? Okay, so what I had to do was go into grants.gov and actually pull up the application kit. The application kit changed recently. We were working with grants.gov. And so there actually was listed here as a project abstract, and then there's also a project abstract summary. All of the forms, there are portals where you can upload information. So the project abstract, it is synonymous with the project abstract summary. So all you have to do is submit a project abstract summary along with your project description. And again, if you're having issues doing so, just let me know. It is required that you do provide a summary of your project. So it's one in the same. There's just an additional form which reads project abstract. So no worries, you only have to submit it one time, and you can submit it under project abstract or project abstract summary, but we do need a summary of your project. And I hope that answers your question, but if not, let me know.
Thank you, Virginia. I'm not seeing any new questions in the chat. Just as a reminder to folks, you're welcome to write your question in the chat. Alternatively, you can use the reactions button in the bottom of your screen if you're looking at this presentation on full screen mode. If you click the reactions button, there should be another button for raising your hand. And if you do that, we'll unmute you so you can ask your question out loud.
Great, hey, thanks, Kara. And while you all are thinking of a couple more questions to ask, I just wanted to highlight a couple of things. So like we've talked about, the key to this notice of funding is to not wait. The application itself, in addition to the various components that Virginia highlighted, requires various different letters of support from areas and partners within your state, within your region, et cetera. So those letters, just because they can take time, really are important to make sure that you have the time in order to be able to do this. So we know that it is a hefty application and just wanna encourage you all to take the time that you can in order to complete it. Other questions from anyone, either within the chat or if you wanted to raise your hand like Kiara had discussed? All right, so as I mentioned, there is the Q&A website as well. So we'll pull up the website for that, so you can see after this call if you have additional questions, that's a great landing spot for any initial questions that you have on this. And there's also other opportunities that you can hear more about the current RDHRS site, so you can really get a feel for their work. Many of them are presenting at the National Healthcare Coalition Preparedness Conference, so that's an opportunity to hear from some of our sites, as well as we're working on various different other opportunities that you can hear more about the great work of some of the sites, because they've really done a lot. They each also have individual websites in addition to the information that's available within the asperphe.gov. And you can see a little bit more about RDHR that's there, but you can also see the various different products and other work that the sites have done on those sites, as well as through various different reports that we've pulled together.
Great. And Brittany, just a note about the FAQs. So I believe Maria is about to drop that link in the chat, and we'll put this in the chat when we share that out as well. But I think currently the website reflects FAQs from last year's application period. However, most of the answers are the same, but that page will be updated in the coming days with any updates relevant to this year's application. However, I think it still serves as a good resource, and we'll be happy to put that in the chat.
Great. Thank you, Kira. Other questions from anyone on the line, whether you wanted to say your question out loud or to type it into the chat? We'll stay on the line in case anyone has questions as they continue to think this through. There is a lot of information within the notice of funding opportunity itself. So very much encourage you to take a look at the different components that are in there, because it walks through many of the different areas that we talked about today, including both the eligible entities, as well as additional information on funding preferences and priorities, the application process, and various different nuances along the way. In addition to actually talking about the capabilities and requirements of the partnership. So really you can see a better understanding of all those different capabilities and the different components that make up those capabilities, and thinking about how your partnership could meet all of those different components and activities as it continues to grow. Right, so it looks like we have a bunch of people who had their questions answered and are headed out, but we will stay on the line a bit longer to see if anyone has questions that they would like to either type into the chat or raise their hand and ask as well. And saw that Maria was able to drop in the FAQ notice, which we'll be updating, as was mentioned, within the next couple of days. We'll stay on for about 2 minutes more to see if anyone has additional questions. And we really appreciate all of your time today. We know that many of you are dealing with a hurricane response or an impending hurricane response. So we very much appreciate the opportunity to talk to you all today. We're very excited about having a fourth demonstration site because our existing sites have done a lot of really great work. And we know that our fourth site is only going to build on that to continue to show the value that can be provided across these different entities and in enhancing regional preparedness and response.
And Brittany, just before we close, I just wanted to thank you and Virginia for providing a great overview and for responding to the questions. As Brittany stated, if you have any questions, please feel free to email us Also, just wanted to let everyone know that this call is being recorded. So following the call, we will make sure that we provide everyone with the follow-up email with a link to the call if you want to listen to it again or to replay it. And I know that some people may not be on the call. We will ensure that folks have the information that they need in order to listen to the recording, see the transcript. And then we'll also make sure that we provide the links that were already mentioned during today's call to the FAQs and to the others and to the website where more information can be found. Those FAQs are really a great source of information for all the questions that we have gathered over the time since the beginning of the program that we have collected. So that's a great source of information if you didn't want to ask your question here. Brittany, you have one new question here that just came in. What letters of support from additional partners would you consider?
Thanks. So it's a great question. So in terms of letters of support, there are a few different categories here. One are the required letters of support. The other is letters of support that are tied to a specific priority points. So there are additional points that can be awarded based on support from these various different entities that have just been pulled up on the screen here, which are part of the notice of funding. By no means are your letters of support restricted to any of those. So we welcome the opportunity if you would like to provide letters of support from elsewhere. You are welcome to do so in terms of having your application in there. So it's really up to you. There are some letters of support that you need to have as part of the application, some letters of support that serve as additional priority points, and then additional letters of support are always welcome. No problem. So we'll do kind of one final last call to see if anyone has any additional questions. If they wanted to type them in the chat now or raise their hand. Otherwise, we will thank you all so much for joining the call today. Really a great opportunity, and we're looking forward to seeing the applications come in for this NOFO and really looking forward to continuing to build the RDHRS and our partnerships. Lots of great opportunities to further opportunities for preparedness and response. So thank you all so much. Not seeing any further questions. So have a great rest of your day. And as Jennifer mentioned, please feel free to take a look at some of the additional documentation or let us know if you have questions along the way. We look forward to working with you further and seeing your application soon. Thanks so much.